today's moderator, that is Shanine Mitchell from EPA Region 2. And one last time before I turn it over to Shanine, I wanted to remind everyone to put their phones on mute, star 6 and pound 6 to unmute. Shanine?
Thanks, Matt. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining the Northeast Brownfields Grant Proposal Workshop for cleanup grants. My name is Shanine Mitchell. I'm a Brownfields Project Manager of Region 2. And along with me, my presenters are Jim Byrne with EPA Region 1 and Christine Gaffney with EPA Region 3. So let's get started with slide 3. And before we get started on the presentation, I'd like to mention that the RLEP information will not be included in this session. However, we do have a presentation and other resources available on this website. So from this CLUN website, you should click on the links to additional resources for additional RLEP information. So let's go over the what we'll be discussing during this session. So during this cleanup webinar, we'll be addressing subjects such as what are brownfields, what types of funding are available and who is eligible to apply, what goes into the proposal and the selection process, threshold criteria, ranking criteria, tips for preparing a winning proposal, and at the end, we'll address additional resources and final questions. Next slide, slide 4. We have a couple disclaimers to discuss. EPA staff cannot provide individual assistance with proposals. This is because we need to give each potential applicant a fair advantage, and this is why we do not. This is why we do the webinar. So we want to make sure that everyone hears the same information. Please keep in mind that this is a competitive grant process. Following today's tips will not guarantee your proposal will be funded. And please, please, please make sure to read the guidelines completely. Move on to the next slide, slide 5. We'd like to thank Region 1, for providing the images that you see in the presentation. So let's move on to slide 6, the Brownfields mission. EPA's Brownfield program empowers states, communities, and other stakeholders in economic redevelopment to work together to assess, safely clean up, and sustainably reuse brownfields. And this includes reducing the amount of green space utilized for development. EPA provides financial and technical assistance for brownfield revitalization and includes grants for environmental assessment, cleanup, job training, and other grants. Next slide. Slide 7. What are brownfields? Brownfields are property that is contaminated or potentially contaminated by hazardous substances, pollutants, contaminants, petroleum, or other controlled substances. And we provide some examples below, such as abandoned gas stations, abandoned commercial or industrial sites, which include factories, dump sites, mine-scarred land, illegal drug labs, and building contamination, such as lead, paint, and asbestos. And please note that Superfund MCL sites and federally owned land facilities are not eligible for brownfields funding. Next slide, slide 8. Benefits of brownfield revitalization. As you can note below, brownfields revitalization helps to increase local tax base, facilitates new job growth, uses existing infrastructure, takes development pressure off undeveloped land. So again, mentioning that revitalizing brownfields means using less green space, prevents sprawl, supports cleaner air, reduces habitat destruction, and discourages blight and vandalism. Because eventually what we're doing is we're cleaning up abandoned, underutilized sites. Next slide, slide 9. And just this gives you a little information about the brownfield grants. Since 1995, EPA has awarded close to 2,000 brownfield grants, totaling close to $600 million. And this has helped assess more than 11,000 properties, and it's helped to leverage more than $11 billion in brownfields cleanup and redevelopment funding from the private and public sectors. And it's also helped to generate more than 48,000 jobs. Next slide. We're going to go to slide 11. authorized brownfield funding. The charts below illustrate different types of grant funding. You note the funding available for state, tribes, and petroleum. Next slide, slide 12. Brownfield Assessment Revolving Loan Fund and Cleanup Grants. Our grants are commonly known as ART grants, and they include, as I mentioned, Assessment, Revolving Loan Fund, and Cleanup Grants. And EPA refers to these grants as ART grants as well. And you may also hear them called 104K grants or competitive brownfield grants. Next slide. EPA brownfield grants are very competitive, and we can't stress this enough. Applicants should be prepared to put time and effort into constructing a winning proposal. Please do not wait till the last minute. At this point, you should have a plan in place with partnerships formed. In 2008, EPA received over 800 proposals. 314 were funded nationally, and there were 194 assessment grants, 108 cleanup grants, and 12 RLF grants. So roughly, 1 in 4 proposals are funded annually. So again, I stress, the grants are very competitive. Next slide, slide 14. FY 2009 application timeline. Here are some important dates to remember. August 22nd, the ART grants went out for proposals, the request for proposals went out. November 14th is the proposal due date, which we'll mention again in the session. And spring 2009, you can expect awards to be announced, and approximately $72 million will be offered nationwide. And then funds will be awarded by September 30th, 2009. Next slide, slide 15. Getting started with the Brownfield ART grant. Please note that the guidelines are separate for each grant type, which is something that we're doing new this year. So don't expect to see all the ART grant information in one booklet. There are 3 different booklets, and they're color-coded. If you need additional information on the proposal guidelines for the ART grant, we have provided the links, and you'll see them below. Next slide, slide 16, the cleanup grant program. So generally, the purpose of the cleanup program is to carry out cleanup activities at a specific brownfield site owned by the applicant. Please be aware that a 20% cost share is required, and the cost share can come in many forms, which we'll discuss later. An applicant can submit up to 3 proposals for 3 separate properties. Cleanup grant applicants must have a Phase 1 and an ASTM E1903-97 Phase 2 Site Assessment Report or equivalent Site Investigation Report complete prior to the proposal submission, and this is something new that we're requesting in the guidelines this year. Next slide, slide 17. What makes a good cleanup grant project? Well, is there an identified need? Is there a targeted area? Is the site ready to be cleaned up? Are redevelopment plans underway? And if you can agree to these points, then you probably have the makings of a good cleanup project. Next slide, slide 18. General grant requirements. The term or project period for cleanup grants is 3 years. Grants cannot pay for administrative costs, especially indirect costs. Quarterly project reports are required. And since the grant term is 3 years, a grant would have to submit 12 quarterly reports for the duration of the project. Next slide, slide 19. Proposal and selection process. A competitive process is followed, and proposals are always evaluated through a national competition. Please keep in mind, proposals for assessment, cleanup, and RLF are all due at the same time. Again, I'm going to stress that proposals are due on November 14, 2008. If you are sending your proposals by mail, they must be postmarked by November 14th. You should submit 2 hard copies, and you can submit electronically via www.grants.gov. If you're using the electronic version, you should start registering at least 1 week in advance to submit your proposal. So please don't leave anything till the last minute. And if you're submitting hard copies, 1 copy is to be mailed to Downwest at Environmental Management Support, and the other is to be mailed to your regional coordinator. So please refer to your guidelines for the contact information. Next slide, slide 20. Proposal and selection process. Separate proposals can be submitted for up to 3 separate properties. All the proposals are reviewed independently. Threshold criteria, which is our pass-fail, a ranking criteria which gets a numerical score. In order for the proposal to be ranked, it must pass all threshold criteria, and then it moves forward to the ranking criteria. And all regions review their threshold criteria for their proposals. National panels review ranking criteria and determine final numeric scores. Awards will be announced in the spring and funding awarded in September 2009. Next slide, who can apply? The chart below explains the types of applicants and the types of grants they can apply for. Under cleanup, all entities below can apply. Next slide, proposal overview. Included in the complete proposal package is bullet one, the cover letter, the threshold criteria, again, which is pass-fail, the ranking criteria, which gets a numerical score, and the required attachments. And make sure that you use the checklist on page 31 of the cleanup guidelines. And please be sure to watch your page limits for each section. Providing us with more than required material may cause you to lose points. Next slide, slide 23, the transmittal letter, also known as the cover letter. It has a maximum length of 2 pages. So see section 4C2 of the guidelines for specific items required for each grant type. And please be sure to use the format proposed to make sure you include all items and requested information. And be sure it's only 2 pages. Next slide, slide 24, transmittal letter. The letter must be signed by an official of your organization. Tell us what kind of grant you're applying for, what kind of funding, whether it's hazardous substances or petroleum, or hazardous substances with a petroleum component, and how much funding you are applying for. Please include the site name and location, contact information, person to call for questions, and make sure that person is available around the application process time, the jurisdiction covered, the population size, the proposed project period, and the population. Next slide, slide 25. Please note sites at which petroleum contamination is commingled with hazardous substances are considered hazardous substance sites. Call your regional brownfields coordinator if you need advice regarding whether your site has petroleum or is commingled. Again, the period of performance is 3 years, so please make sure that this is reflected in your budget and the layout of your project in the ranking criteria. Next slide, slide 26. An applicant must be the sole owner of the site. An applicant who is not currently the sole owner at the time of application must obtain sole ownership by June 30th, 2009. And we can't stress this enough because we've given money back because applicants have not acquired their site by June 30th, 2009, or June 30th. So if you don't get this process done, you'll be ineligible for funding. For purposes of eligibility determinations in these guidelines, own the term own means fee simple title evidenced by a recorded deed on or before June 30th, 2009. Next slide, slide 27. Cost share. Applicants must provide a 20% cost share for cleanup grants. So a $200,000 cleanup grant will require a $40,000 cost share. The cost share may be in the form of a contribution of money, labor, material, or services and must be for eligible and allowable costs and cannot include administrative costs. Applicants may request a waiver of the cost share requirement. EPA will consider hardship waiver requests on a case-by-case basis. Next slide we're moving on to is slide 29, threshold versus ranking criteria. The threshold criteria, again, I mentioned, is a pass-fail process. You must meet all threshold criteria to be evaluated against the ranking criteria. So we recommend that you look at the threshold criteria carefully to make sure that you answer all questions clearly. And please be advised, if we have questions about your threshold criteria, we'll go back and clarify. Ranking criteria. Ranking criteria contains questions with specific point values. Proposals will be evaluated based on the extent and quality to which the criteria are addressed. And that concludes my section of the cleanup session. If there are any questions, please feel free to address them now before we move on to Region 1. Are there any questions?
There were no online questions submitted either. So if there aren't any questions, we will move forward.
Christine Gaffney. I work in EPA's Region 3 office in Philadelphia, and I'm going to review the ranking, the threshold criteria for you today. So we're going to start out on slide 31, actually. And I'm hoping everybody can hear me okay. The important thing about to know about all this threshold criteria is it is pass-fail. And for those of you who were on our session yesterday for the assessment grants, take note that there's a lot of additional threshold criteria here for cleanup grants. So there's more tests that you have to pass, in other words. It's very important that you answer all the questions that are asked under the threshold criteria for cleanup, because if you miss a question, it could result in the failure of your proposal. So please read it carefully and take time answering all the questions. Moving on to slide 32, this is an overview of what the different threshold criteria are. First of all, you have to be an eligible applicant. We need a letter from your state authority. I'm going to go through more detail on each one. This is just the overview. Your site has to be eligible. You need to have an oversight structure in place to oversee a cleanup. You need to meet your cost share. And we have a new requirement. For those of you who are familiar with our process in the past, we need you to conduct community notification of your proposal before you submit it. You have to pass all these criteria before you can move forward to be ranked and scored at the national panel. If you happen to have the guidelines handy and you want to read along, refer to starting on page 11 is where the threshold criteria starts. It's section 3C. And the threshold criteria are, the questions are asked on pages 11 through 19. So next slide, the first criteria, I'm on slide 34, is the applicant eligibility. Slide 33. Tell us how you are an eligible applicant. It's quite obvious sometimes if you're just a city or a county, for example, but if you are what we refer to as a quasi-governmental organization, a redevelopment authority, an industrial development authority, some sort of regional planning commission, et cetera, give us a little detail as to how you are going to demonstrate that you're an eligible applicant. And particularly if you're a nonprofit, you want to provide evidence of your nonprofit status in your proposal. Slide 34. Once again, these are the type of people who are eligible or type of applicants who are eligible for cleanup grants, municipalities, quasi-governmental organizations, regional councils, anything that is either authorized or created by a state or local government would generally meet the definition of a quasi-governmental organization. And once again, we emphasize that nonprofits are eligible for EPA cleanup grants. They're not eligible for assessment grants and revolving loan fund grants, but they are eligible for cleanup grants. Okay, the next slide is 35, and we're going to talk a little bit now about site ownership. As Shanine already mentioned, we can only give grants to owners of properties. So you don't have to own the grant today at the time you are applying, but you have to be pretty certain you're going to get ownership before June 30th of 2009. If you are selected for an award, we expect that you will have full ownership by June 30th, or we will not give you the award. We'll have to give your grant to somebody else instead. That is a hard and fast deadline. Every year, we pull many grants across the country because people do not achieve full ownership by June 30th of the deadline for whatever given year it is. Next slide, 36. Threshold criteria is the letter from your state environmental authority. You need to submit a letter acknowledging that you're from your state authority, acknowledging that you plan to conduct cleanup activities and that you are applying for EPA grant funds. Your state, we've provided contact information in the resources material for this. So for each of the states in the Northeast, you can look up who your contact is in your given state to get that letter to submit with your proposal. They're all familiar with the process. They know what what you're calling about. They know what, how to do the letter. So I encourage you to get in contact with your state person right away to get them working on that letter. If you're applying for several different grants, several cleanup grants, or a cleanup grant and an assessment grant, you only need one letter from the state recognizing that you're applying for EPA funds. However, make sure you attach that letter to each and every proposal. If we don't receive the letter attached to your proposal, then it will probably result in the failure of your proposal. Slide 37, keep in mind general letters of correspondence and documents from your state about a given site, for example, are not acceptable. They have to reference the fact that you're applying to EPA for funds, for grant funding. Once again, you can find the state contacts at the end of this presentation. Moving on to slide 38, the next criteria is site eligibility. This is where we want to make sure that your actual property that you're going to be working on is eligible under our program. There are a lot of questions to help us make that determination in section 3. Basically, you've got to tell us some background on the site, the history of the site, how it potentially became contaminated, and I'm going to go through some of the other requirements that you're going to have to meet to demonstrate that you are not a responsible party for the site as well. Next slide, 39. If your site is a hazardous substance site, you need to demonstrate that you are not a liable party under the Superfund law, which is known as CERCLA. 107. We also have to make sure there's no enforcement actions on the site, and we also have to make sure that you can provide a defense, an applicable defense under the law that shows that as a property owner you are not liable for contamination on that site. If you are applying for a site that's contaminated with petroleum, there's different criteria, and there's a different set of questions in the guidelines. You're going to make the decision up front. Am I applying for a site that's contaminated with hazardous substances? And you answer the hazardous substances question. Or are you applying for a site with petroleum? And you're going to answer the petroleum question. If you have a site where you have both, maybe you have one section of your site that's got some hazardous substance, and then you have another part of the site that may have petroleum contamination, such as an underground storage tank that needs to be pulled, you want to make sure you address both sets of questions, just so that everybody's clear and you make sure that you are providing all the information that we need to make the decision. The most important thing about petroleum sites is the state makes the decision as to whether or not you're an eligible site under our program. So EPA doesn't actually regulate petroleum sites for the most part. They're regulated at the state level under the state cleanup program. So that's why you need to contact your state. There is a series of questions and the threshold criteria. You want to write up those responses to all those questions, provide them to your state official, and have them give you a letter back responding to it saying whether or not you are an eligible site for an EPA cleanup grant. The contacts, once again, for who you need to contact in your individual state are provided in the resources section of this presentation. They're at the end of the PowerPoint, and they're also a link, a hot link, off the resources page on today's CLUIN session main page. I'm now on slide 41. I'm going to go quickly through the different criteria for hazardous sites versus petroleum sites. Basically, if it's a hazardous site, EPA is the decision maker, and you have to prove to us through the questions that you are not potentially liable for the site. If it's a petroleum site, the state is the decision maker. You need to get that letter from the state. Contact them ASAP to get working on it. Don't wait till the last minute to get your letter from them, and you need to submit it as an attachment to your proposal. Slide 42, hazardous substance sites. These are for sites, obviously, if you're going to apply for this grant, you probably already own the site. If you don't own the site, then you are going to make sure you own the site by June 30th. So you're essentially considered an owner of the site. And under the Superfund laws, or CERCLA, owners are considered liable for contamination on the site. unless they can prove otherwise that they're not, and we call that meeting a liability defense. These defenses are highly dependent upon how and when the site was acquired. So therefore, your eligibility for your site under a program depends on how and when you bought the site. And you're going to see lots of questions in the guidelines that help us tease out that information. Slide 43, once again, you are considered liable unless you can meet one of these following defenses. You took the property through involuntary acquisition. That would be examples such as tax foreclosure or eminent domain. And the second most common exemption you're probably going to try to make is a bona fide prospective purchaser. That means you've knowingly bought the site that was contaminated, but you had to meet a bunch of criteria before buying the site to prove that. The innocent landowner and the contiguous property owner defenses are somewhat limited in their applicability to our program. But the bona fide prospective purchaser, once again, those are on page 44. Those are the key requirements you're going to have to demonstrate. And you can only be a bona fide prospective purchaser if you bought the property after 2002. If you bought the property prior to 2002, you can still apply for a grant as long as you demonstrate that you met the basic requirements as a bona fide prospective purchaser. First of all, you cannot be responsible for contamination on the site in any way. A common example of a site that would not be eligible, for example, is a municipal landfill. The city owned the site, the city put the contamination there, the city's not eligible to apply for that site. A owner or an applicant can also not be affiliated with any responsible party. So if you, it could be a family relationship, a financial relationship, or a contractual relationship. So in other words, you can't pass a property from one office of a city to another office of a city. For example, a DPW yard. If you try to transfer the DPW yard to the Economic Development Authority of the same community, we would call that an affiliation and probably deem the site. And the most important thing regarding the bona fide prospective purchaser is you have to prove you conducted all appropriate inquiry before you bought the site. And that must have been done, once again, before you bought it. And typically, it's a phase one assessment, phase one ASTM, phase one environmental site assessment. If it was happened before 2006, the property was purchased, you just have to show that you did the ASTM prior to buying the site. If you bought the site after November 2006, you have to prove that you did ASTM and that it was current at the time you bought the site. In order to be current, it couldn't have been any more than 6 months old at the time of purchase. So basically, the new rules for all appropriate inquiries say for phase one, it's only good for 6 months. After 6 months, you have to update it. After a year, you have to do a whole new one. So phase ones now have an expiration date, essentially. So you have to make sure that if you haven't bought the property yet, you're planning to buy it by June to get the grant, it's very important that if your phase one is more than 6 months old, you're going to have to get it updated before you make that purchase or you will otherwise be ineligible for the grant. Okay, next slide is 45. A little bit more on the petroleum contaminated site. Essentially, you have to demonstrate to the state, and the state has to approve of it, that the site is relatively low risk, that there is no viable responsible party who is financially capable of cleaning up the site, and that there's you as the owner and the applicant are not a responsible party on the site. In other words, you weren't responsible for the petroleum contamination there in any way, and also that there's no RIC or corrective action orders on the site. So those are the criteria that you're going to have to demonstrate, and the state will be the one making the decisions for you. Next slide, 46. There's also a provision for special categories of sites. These are the sites listed here, RCRA sites with a permanent order, active Superfund sites, TCB sites, hazardous waste landfills, plus trust fund sites. These sites can be eligible for funding. There's a different set of hoops that you have to jump through called a property-specific determination that we will make, EPA will make. There is information in Appendix 2 and in the frequently asked questions associated with the guidelines. It tells you how to complete a property-specific determination. The number one thing that I can say about it is to contact us first if you have one of these sites. 547, call us. We'll help you do the property-specific determination. We'll make sure you understand the information you need to provide and how it should be fit into your proposal. But essentially, you're going to have to defend why we should be giving funding to this site over other sites, and you're going to have to answer a whole series of questions that will be an attachment to your proposal. Slide 48, these are the people in the different EPA regional offices, the New England office. Region 1 is Jim Burns. Region 2, which essentially covers New York, New Jersey, and Puerto Rico, give Larry DeAndrea a call. In my region, Region 3, you can call Tom Stoll. There's their contact information. Okay, moving on to slide 49. The next threshold criteria is cleanup authority and oversight structure. You're going to have to tell us how you're going to oversee an environmental cleanup. There's essentially two ways you can do it. You can enroll in your state cleanup program, your state voluntary cleanup program, and that's pretty much our preferred approach, although it's not required. And then the state will be the one helping make the decision whether or not the site is being cleaned up appropriately. Otherwise, you're going to have to procure or have on your staff a qualified environmental professional who will be there to make sure that the cleanup is conducted in a safe and in protective environment for human health and the environment. So you have two choices, like I said. You can either show us that you have somebody qualified in your staff, or you can use the grant dollars to contract out that service. The other thing you're going to have to prove under this threshold, 4B, is that if you need to get onto adjacent properties to help clean up the site, maybe you can only access a part of your property that's contaminated by going onto somebody else's property, then you have to show, you have to prove to us that you will be able to do that. You'd be able to access another property to get on and clean up your own site. Slide 50, this is the criteria for cost share. We already talked about it a little bit, but in this, in your proposal, you're going to have to demonstrate, once again, that you can meet your 20% cost share, describe your plans for providing cost share. It's not enough to just say, yes, I will meet my 20% cost share. You have to give us a plan for how you're going to do that. Is it going to come out of your own funds? Do you have matching funds from another source? Are you going to do your in-kind services? Etc. For example, if say you have a property that's going to cost $1 million to clean up, we know that our $200,000 grant is not going to cover the whole cleanup. The remaining sources of money that you're going to have to pay for that $1 million cleanup would be, you know, more than enough to demonstrate your cost share, and you would just have to explain that in your proposal. There is more information in the frequently asked questions about cost share to help you figure that out. And here's a link here in Region 1's Brown site, which has a very nice PowerPoint on everything you ever needed and wanted to never know about cost share. We also have a potential to get a waiver for the cost share on the grant. I will tell you that it's very hard to get a waiver. I mean, you can try if you feel, but you better demonstrate that your community or your organization is in really, really bad shape. And essentially, we pretty much are only giving these out in areas where there's been, like, big natural disasters and so forth. So otherwise, just to say that, you know, your community is poor is not necessarily enough to get you a waiver. And call us if you want to talk about that more, and we'll help you figure out whether a waiver is the best approach for you to try to take. Slide 51. The next criteria, and I believe it's also the last threshold criteria, is community notification. This is very important. It requires a lot of upfront work for you to do right now. If you've applied for us in the past, for these grants in the past, we previously allowed you to do community notification after you were selected for a grant. We then told you you had to go out and do community notification. Now we're saying you have to do it before you even submit your proposal. What do you need to do? You need to provide the community with notice of your intent to apply for an EPA cleanup grant and provide them an opportunity to submit comments. You must also provide a summary of those comments and your responses to them to EPA as part of your proposal package. You must hold a public meeting and discuss the draft proposal and consider the comments you receive from the public. Slide 52. In order to get started, you need to place an ad in your local newspaper or an equivalent and provide at least 2 weeks notice to people before the due date of the proposal. Your ad must clearly tell people where they can get a copy of the grant proposal and how they can submit comments on the grant proposal. Once again, in our frequently asked questions that are associated with the guidelines, we have more information on what would be an acceptable community notification method. And applicants who are submitting more than one proposal for clean, say you're submitting cleanup grant proposals for three sites, or you're submitting a proposal for a cleanup grant and an assessment grant, you can do community notification all at one time as long as you're hitting the appropriate target communities and giving them notification and an opportunity to comment. Slide 53, just in summary, real fast here, this is what you have to provide in your proposal: a copy of the ad in the paper that demonstrates notification, a copy of the comments any comments you receive and how you responded to those comments, and meeting notes and sign-in sheets from the public meeting to prove that the public meeting was held. And that is the end of the threshold criteria. Before we move on to the ranking criteria, let's see if we have any questions. And I see that there are some here on the
Yes, we do have three questions, online questions. The first one is a site eligibility question, and it is a site eligible if there was contamination from illegal squatters on an otherwise eligible site?
That is a very tricky question, and it's difficult to answer without more specific information. Basically, we would do a very thorough analysis as to how that contamination may have got there. There is some, I'm not an attorney, but I know there is some defenses under the Superfund law that said if it was truly, you know, a third-party criminal act, for example, for how the contamination got there, then it may be eligible for a defense as the innocent landowner. However, it's not a short and easy question to answer, and you'd have to give us a lot more specific information before we can give you a definitive answer.
Exactly, Christine. I agree with you. What could enter in here is that if it is an eligible site and there is contamination from another party, sometimes the attorneys would look at whether or not the owner of that site could have prevented that contamination by something simple as fencing or security or something like that. So a lot more detail would be needed in order to make that determination.
Okay, the second question is also an eligibility question, and it's from Region 1. If you applied for the EPA's FY07 Brownfields Cleanup Grant and you received the grant funding, is the same site eligible for FY08 grant funding?
Well, that's a depends question, okay? Each site is eligible up to $200,000 in EPA funding. So if you applied, David, for $200,000 last year for the site in question, you would not be able to come in for additional funding. However, if you applied for $100,000, let's say, last year, you would be allowed to come in again to make it up to the $200,000 maximum per site.
Okay, and the third online question is from Region 2. Can you use state environmental restoration program funds to meet the 20% match requirement?
That's the state funding, yeah.
Yes, that's state
yes.
Funds.
Yes, you can do that.
Okay, are there any other questions before we move on to the ranking criteria?
Just to clarify that last question, basically you can match with any state funds. The only thing you can't match with is other federal funds.
Correct, and that would include the state 128A funding, I believe, correct? Which is a federal source, but it's state money.
I have to think about that one.
I need to think about that one, too.
I think our answer up here in Region 1 would that funding would be ineligible to be applied.
I don't know about that. I need to check that out.
Okay, we got one more online question, site eligibility question. If you are awarded an EPA cleanup grant and you intend to apply for your state cleanup program, which receives EPA cleanup funding, is your total from each source $200,000?
Yes. Thank you, Bonnie.
Okay. Last call for questions before we move on to ranking criteria.
Yeah, feel free to ask them over the phone, too. You don't have to type them in.
And if you still have some questions and haven't formulated them yet, we will get to them at the next break. If there's questions about threshold, it's not like we're going to stop answering them by any means. So continue to submit questions online, and we will get to them at the next break.
Hi, this is Jim Byrne from Region 1 up in Boston, home of the world champion Boston Red Sox and the world champion Boston Celtics. I'm here today to present to you the ranking criteria for cleanup. As you can see on slide 55, there are four ranking criteria sections worth a total of 100 points this year. We're looking at community need for 15 points, project description and feasibility of success for 40 points, community engagement and partnership for 15 points, and project benefits for 30 points. Big tip here, be sure to read the opening paragraphs for each criteria as it includes very important information on how to respond to each of these sections. Moving on to slide 56. We're looking at the criteria under community need. Now, community need is a criteria where you really want to make us feel for you, okay? I like to call this the Kleenex criteria. All you folks that work for municipalities, we realize that your job is to advocate for your community. But in this criteria, you need to make your community look like hell on earth. Okay? Make it look like the worst place you could ever possibly live. That will go a long way in helping us get you this funding. Under health, welfare, and the environment, 1A, you need to describe the effect of brownfields on the targeted community. You also need to describe the health and welfare of sensitive populations in that community. 1B, financial need. You need to describe the economic impact of brownfields on the targeted community. This can include such things as rates of poverty, income, and unemployment. You also need to describe the factors that limit ability to acquire other sources of funds. If you have a current or previous EPA brownfields grant, you need to explain why you need this additional funding. Moving on to slide 57, a little bit more detail on 1A, health, welfare, and the environment. As I mentioned before, you need to describe the effect of brownfields on the targeted community. Here you should identify the number and size of brownfields and what you are considering your target area. It could be the whole city. It could be a neighborhood where your cleanup site is located. Additionally, you need to describe the health, welfare, and environmental impacts of these sites, as well as the site you are applying for. You need to be as specific as possible here by utilizing examples. Talk about the types and numbers of sites that you have. Talk about what happened at the site. Was it an oil production site? Was it a corner gas station? Was there manufacturing there? Continuing on health, welfare, and the environment, you need to describe the health and welfare of sensitive populations in the area. Take a look at the population in the target community and highlight things such as how many children live in the area? Are there elderly people in the area? Are there women of childbearing age there? How many minorities are in the area? You need to provide any data showing that residents are disproportionately impacted by these environmental problems caused by the site or sites. Take a look at cancer rates. Take a look at asthma studies data. Check with health departments. This is a good opportunity to form a partnership with either your local health department or your county health department or your state health agency. You need to identify all information sources. Moving on to slide 59. 1B, financial need. Some more detail on that. Take a look at the brownfield's economic impact on your community. Describe any economic and or social situations of your targeted community. Provide demographic data of the target community. You can get this from the most recent census. Look at unemployment, household income, and poverty rates. Look at minority rates, single head of household, rent versus ownership. Look at crime rates. What's the dropout rate in your school system? If it helps, use a tabular format if the data tells the story better than writing it. Compare your local data to state and national data. Again, please identify all information sources. Slide 60, some additional information and detail on financial need. You need to explain the factors why other resources may not be available to your community. Some of them can be fiscal. Take a look at your tax base. Is it declining? City spending. Have you had any recent disasters? I know up here in the Northeast, with all the rains we had this summer, there was a lot of flooding. That could certainly be an impact that might hurt your ability to have funding to deal with these types of brownfields issues. Take a look at geographic issues. Are you located far away in a rural zone from a highway? Things of that nature. Is your population size small? Explain why you are cash poor and why you need this grant. Some more on financial needs. Take a look at factors why other resources are not available. Okay? We're going to look into now, are you an existing brownfields grantee? You need to be careful here. This section can get a little confusing. Describe why an additional grant is needed in your community. You can say you're going to use it to build on past work, to continue the momentum that the first EPA grant started. You're going to be looking at a master plan for reuse, things of that nature. One last tip on community need. Community need is also about what is needed to improve lives in your community. Plant the seed of those needs in this section and in the remainder of your proposal. Show you have a plan and a vision for supplying the answers to those needs. For example, if the community is losing good-paying manufacturing jobs, what are you going to do to replace them? If poor families need affordable housing, are you going to address that need and how are you going to do it? If the community badly needs green space, or wants to invest in smart growth elements to create a more vibrant community, what are you going to do? Moving on to the second ranking criteria, we're now on slide 63. We're looking at project description and feasibility success. This is a biggie. It's worth 40 points. It's broken down into three subcategories. 2A, project description, worth 10 points, where you're going to be talking about your project and your proposed cleanup plan. 2B, the budget for the EPA funding and leveraging of other resources. You're going to be creating a budget table and talking to us about detailed task descriptions. And leveraging, where you're going to get the rest of the money from. 2C, we're looking at programmatic capability. Have you received an EPA brownfields grant before? Have you not? A little bit of detail on project description. What you want to do here is describe your project. This is a new criteria for the cleanup proposals, and it's important to focus on what you want to say here. Tell the reader the story of the cleanup and the redevelopment in as much detail as possible. Talk to us about the big picture, who, why, what, when, and where, and how. If possible, describe your overall project through the end, through reuse. Be succinct. Tell us exactly why you're applying for this funding. Describe your vision and your motivation for wanting to do this. Describe the proposed cleanup plan. A cleanup plan describes the recommended remediation objectives from your Phase 2 report and how they will be achieved. If you have a complete Phase 2 report, you should have a good idea what your cleanup plan is going to be. This is an area where I would recommend you're using your environmental contractor if you have a previous relationship with one. They can help you here with this. They're the experts in developing these cleanup plans. They're familiar with your state voluntary cleanup programs. Ask them for help here. These plans could include specific institutional or engineering controls and the potential end use for the site. Be sure to provide enough detail so the reader will get the idea that this project is going to happen. 2B. We want to talk about budget and leveraging of other resources here. the table. Real simple. This is the easiest way to get points. It's also one of the easiest ways to lose points. When you're preparing the budget table, we recommend that you use the format that's included in your guidelines. Okay? Please make sure the numbers add up. It is so easy to lose points just because you get a little sloppy here. Okay? In terms of detailed task descriptions, we recommend that task one be identified as cooperative agreement oversight. This should include such items as your travel and your supply costs, what type of money you're going to charge to oversee the grant from your city or town's point of view. Please be sure to include the cost share in both the budget and in the task descriptions. That is, if your cost share is going to be spread through all four tasks on the budget, make sure you reflect that. Slide 67 shows you the format that we would like to use. Believe me, in reading 20 or 30 or 40 of these every year, it really helps as a reviewer to be looking at the same thing in every proposal. It makes it a heck of a lot more convenient, makes things go smoother, and it keeps your reviewer in a good mood. So please use this. Some more on the budget table. You need to research cost eligibility. If a reader doubts a task eligibility, you're going to lose points here. If you have any cost eligibility questions, call EPA or check the frequently asked questions. There's a good section in there on it. You need to keep in mind that there's an administrative cost band. For details, refer to the appendix in the guidelines and to the frequently asked questions section for other ineligible costs. The key thing to remember here is things such as indirect costs are definitely not allowed, and please do not include any costs for equipment. Some advice here on personnel costs and strategies. Whether you are charging personnel costs to the grant or not, use the preparation of your detailed task descriptions to create reasonable personnel cost estimates. When you're charging personnel costs, the reviewer is looking for a reasonable association between the amount of activities that person is going to be doing versus the amount that's charged in the table. Whenever you charge less to the grant than your estimated personnel costs, this becomes in-kind services, which you should point out to the reviewer and take advantage of. Remember that these in-kind services can be used as your cost share match. Some detail on the task descriptions we've been talking about. Please describe each task in detail, including the basis for the estimated costs with each task. For example, if you're talking about travel costs, we encourage everybody here to go to the Brownfields Conference. Next year it's going to be in New Orleans in November. That is if New Orleans is still there. What you want to do is look at the specific example here. Make this stuff make sense. For supplies, provide a list of the supplies that's reflective of the cost in the table. Contractual, estimate the soil removal or the placement of the cap material or what you're going to pay your contractor to complete this cleanup. If personnel and contractual costs are mixed in the same task, please break them out. Describe the activities associated with each cost. Break it down into percentages. How many percent is going to be your part? How many percent is going to be their part?
Jim, we have a budget question real quick just to clarify, if you don't mind answering now.
Sure.
Why is there an equipment line in the budget if equipment is not eligible?
Well, equipment is not exactly eligible. I mean, it's not exactly ineligible, okay? But what we're looking at here in these grants is, if you look at the definition of what equipment is under the grant guidelines, it's stuff that costs over $5,000, all right? And I guess what I should have said to clarify that there is, you know, you shouldn't be out there buying a car or a backhoe with money. That's something that would be considered equipment. Anything less than $5,000 is considered a supply. This is on there because in the old days, remember when computers used to cost a lot of money? Well, computers, you know, used to cost over $5,000. And sometimes, you know, people would need a computer or a CAD, something or other to get through this. Okay? My advice on this, if you do plan to purchase equipment, would be to talk to your EPA Brownfields coordinator about that and how you can work your way through it. This is just a recommendation and a tips and tricks session that this is something that reviewers don't look kindly on. Okay.
Yeah, Jim, this is Christine. I'll just intercede here, too, because this
Thank
is
you.
My grantee. But Deb, also, while we do have people purchasing equipment with these grants, but if you are going to purchase equipment and you're going to put that in your budget table, you better give us a really solid description of what that equipment is and provide some justification for the cost of it. Maybe, you know, you did some comparison shopping, for example, and if you're buying something that, you've got two or three bids on what the cost would be. So you just have to provide a lot more information to justify the expense of actual equipment. That would be up for $5,000.
Yeah, this is Ramon Torres. I think we were talking about the proposal here. If you're planning to apply to buy some equipment, you can't say that. Remember, if the proposal has been selected, the work plan will negotiate the budget anyway. So then that's when all the details need to be addressed. But in the proposal, be careful. I mean, you want to buy some equipment, just mention it and just mention what kind of equipment you're planning to buy, just to give us an idea. But again, just use the $5,000 rule. That's the best way to do it. But I mean, don't get into too much details because that's more negotiable in the if the grant is being selected.
And we did have just one follow-up question on that. It's regarding talking to your Brownfields coordinator about your budget. It says that my understanding is that this is a ranking criterion and that they are not allowed to discuss budget with them. So if you guys can address that as well, please.
Do you want me to grab that, Ramon, or do you?
You can go ahead.
My opinion here would be you're talking about whether or not to purchase equipment with a Brownfields grant, which in my mind would not exactly be a budget question. I might be skating on thin ice here, but these are big picture issues regarding equipment versus the budget as a whole. Would you guys agree with that? Or are you going to let me fall in?
No, I think if somebody asked whether a piece of equipment was, an eligible cost under grant, we could answer that kind of question, I think.
Yes, and actually, I think in my grant specialty card, it all depends on what the applicant is, a city or a county or a town, and they have their own definitions of equipment and patrol and supplies. It's up to them what they're going to put in there.
Okay.
We say that for equipment, EPA or the federal government asks for $5,000 or less. That's supplies. And $5,000 or more is considered equipment. So use that rule and, you can put there, and that's all.
Okay, thank you. Now back to the slides. We're on 70.
We are on slide 71.
Or 71. Okay, go ahead.
We're still discussing task descriptions here. You need to describe each task in detail, including the basis for the estimated cost. You need to do this for each activity within each task. Okay, as part of each task description, include the outputs that you would expect to see from each activity. Be specific to the numbers you are committing to. Please don't forget to do this. Here's a definition for outputs. Outputs refer to an environmental activity, effort, and or associated work product related to an environmental goal or objective that will be produced or provided over a period of time or by a specified date. Now, we're done with the gobbledygook. Here's what an output really is. Outputs may be quantitative or qualitative, but must be measurable during the project period. Expected outputs for grants awarded under these guidelines are pretty simple. It's the cleanup of a brownfield site. Other outputs could include the number of community meetings you have held and or the number of tanks pulled or the tons of dirty dirt removed. Some more on budget, the budget for EPA funding. You need to remember, if you're submitting one proposal that includes a request for both hazardous substances and petroleum funding, you need to include two budgets and two sets of task descriptions. These are separate funds. Congress has required us to keep these funds separate and account for them separately. So if you are applying for two types of funding on one grant, you need to do this. Some more under 2B. Leveraging. If you determine that you need additional cleanup work, you need to describe any other funding or resources that you have or will seek to complete this additional work. Describe other sources of funding or resources you have or are seeking to ensure the successful revitalization of the site. describe any gap in overall project funding you may have. It could be assessment. It could be cleanup planning. It could be cleanup. It could be reuse funding. Do not say you have no other funding. You need to remember that you have the potential to access the state's 128A funding. You also have the potential to access your regional targeted brownfields assessment program. This would be for assessment systems. Some more on leveraging. You need to describe all the funding you already have leveraged for this project. Describe all the possible funds being sought. You have a ton of federal funds here, such as HUD, BETI, EDA, DOI, TBA, et cetera. You have a lot of state funds, I'm sure, in your state. Take a look at state TBAs. Take a look at tax credits. You might have a lot of local things going on, TIF districts, taxes, bonds. Also, you can take a look at private sources of funding. They could be a private foundation, investors in your project. Could be donations. Could be the developer you're partnering with. You can also provide examples of past leverage successes from similar projects you've done in town. Remember that it takes a village to redevelop a brownfield site. You can't depend on one source of funding. You need to make yourself look successful here. 2C, programmatic capability. This is broken down into two sections here, so you need to be careful. You need to make sure you answer the right question here. If you have ever received an EPA Brownfields grant, respond to subcriteria 2.C.I. If you have never received an EPA Brownfields grant, but have received other federal or non-federal assistance agreements, the most common of those would be from a state, respond to subcriteria 2.C.II. If you have never received any type of federal or non-federal assistance agreement, please indicate this in your proposal, and you will receive a neutral score of 10 points for this factor. Again, I got to remind you, please be careful of which one you respond to here. 2.C.I, if you have received an EPA Brownfields grant, please provide us the information on no more than 5 of your most recent EPA Brownfields grants. Describe how you have successfully managed and performed all phases of work under these grants, including your funding expenditures, compliance with the grant requirements, such as terms and conditions, quarterly reporting, and acres. Check with your project officer on this one. If you guys owe us reports, get them done. Update your quarterly report submissions and do your acres data input immediately. Describe your past successes with this EPA Brownfields funding. We're now on slide 77. We're still discussing if you have an EPA Brownfields grant in your past. Take some time to describe your staff expertise and their qualifications. Name names on who will be involved with this grant, and point out other expertise you can draw on in your organization. Explain your experience in acquiring the needed expertise and resources through competitive procurement, i.e. hiring environmental contractors. Describe any adverse audit findings or corrective actions you've been required to undergo. Also, please describe any past grant management issues. Identify past barriers and the solutions you might have come up with to get through this. Continuing with programmatic capability on slide 78, 2.C.II, if you have not received an EPA Brownfields grant, but you have received other federal or non-federal assistance agreements, you need to concentrate on this section. Again, provide information on no more than five of your most recent assistance agreements. Address your ability to meet any required reporting requirements. Describe your ability to manage this grant and successfully perform all phases of work under this grant. Describe your staff expertise and qualifications. Describe any adverse audit findings or corrective actions you might have to undergo. As you can see, this is very similar to the previous question. Moving on to criteria 3 under the ranking criteria, we're on slide 79, community engagement and partnerships, worth 15 points. In this section, you're going to be talking to us about your community engagement plan, any local, state, and/or tribal partnerships you might have, and how you interact with community-based organizations. 3A, your community engagement plan. You're going to need to discuss your plans for involving the affected community in the following areas. How are you going to involve them in your cleanup decisions? How are they involved or will they be involved in your reuse plan? describe your plan for communicating the progress of your project. How are you going to do that? You can have public meetings. You're going to do updates on your website. You're going to mail out fact sheets, press releases. Are you going to have an open house or a design charrette at the site? These are all good ideas. Please include any plans for communicating in languages commonly used in the community. Please also remember the folks that are hearing impaired and the blind may face significant impediments as well. Moving on to slide 81, some more on your community engagement plan. Describe an aggressive and detailed plan for using the applicants' and partners' websites. As we mentioned before, press releases and other creative uses of the print media. Consider having more public meetings. Commit to a number or a frequency or a milestone. Look at convenient meeting locations in the affected community. Some examples might be a Knights of Columbus Hall or a VFW. Since site-specific, make sure you make an effort to hold these meetings in the neighborhood. And make sure you think about scheduling the meetings for the working public, i.e. after 5 o'clock when people get home. A common thing that happens here in this region is, you know, we have a lot of city council or town council meetings, mayor's meetings and the like. A lot of times what they'll do is they'll just attach us as an agenda item onto those meetings. People are aware of them. They happen on a regular basis. That's a good tip. Think about sending out flyers. Think about going to community group meetings, neighborhood meetings, things of that nature. Continuing on your community engagement plan, describe your plan to encourage involvement. Describe your plan for how you're going to provide responses to the public. Are you going to use the web? Are you going to use email? Are you going to use regular mail? Or are you going to call them? Remember to address all potential language barriers. Have a plan to translate materials. Have a plan to accommodate different cultures in your community. Relate this to the demographic data in your community needs section. And again, remember the hearing impaired. Remember the blind. Moving on to slide 83. 3B, you're going to need to talk about local, state, and tribal partnerships you may have developed. Describe your partnerships with both these agencies, your state environmental agency and your health agency. This could be your local board of health, your county health agency, or your state health agency. Also talk about other relevant governmental agencies that might be involved in your community or on this project. Common examples could be the Department of Transportation. Describe your plan for developing other partnerships. How are you going to reach out to other governmental agencies? Become knowledgeable about and demonstrate that you have knowledge regarding your state programs. If appropriate, indicate you plan to enroll your sites in state programs as required. 3C, community-based organizations. Provide a description of and the role of key community-based organizations that are involved in your project or will be involved in your project. This can include local citizens groups, environmental groups, whether they be local, regional, or national, civic groups, educational institutions. Make sure you describe the project role in the proposal. You're going to need a letter from each of these community-based organizations that's involved or will be involved in your project. This is required as a proposal attachment and is a letter that describes their project role and the commitments that this community-based organization will make to your project. Please don't utilize form letters. These aren't going to work. Each letter should speak from that organization's view of your brownfields work. As mentioned before, they need to describe the project role and they need to describe the commitment to your project. How many community-based organizations do you need? You need to think about the size of your community, how many you have, and what it'll take to get you the 5 points in this section. Here are some examples of what these community-based organizations might be able to help you with on your project. They could provide finance or legal advice. They could help post community outreach materials on the web or include it in any newsletters they might issue. They could host public meetings, i.e. like the Knights of Columbus Hall. They could provide technical assistance, for instance. If a qualified environmental professional happens to be a member of a local or regional environmental group, here's where they can help you out. They could participate on your Brownfields Committee as a board member. They could provide some portion of the cost share by providing materials or equipment. Moving on to slide 87. Here's some examples of what community-based organizations are. As you can see, it's a pretty wide variety here. Chambers of commerce, churches. Who doesn't have a church in their community that wants to be involved? Environmental nonprofits, economic development organizations, community development corporations, social service providers, downtown development committees, revitalization committees, affordable housing organizations, land trusts, neighborhood associations, regional economic strategy groups, health organizations, educational institutions such as a community college or a university you might have in your town or city. Moving on to slide 88, we're on ranking criteria 4, project benefits, worth 30 points. As you can see, you should put some work in there too, and on this section as well. You're going to be discussing in this criteria welfare and or public health, economic benefits and or green space benefits. This year, this is new. It's broken down into two sections here, economic benefits and or non-economic benefits. You're also going to have to talk about environmental benefits from infrastructure reuse. You're also going to be measuring progress here. You're going to tell us how you're going to do that. 4A, welfare and or public health. Describe the environmental, social, and or public health benefits that you anticipate from the redevelopment of this site that's going to be cleaned up under this grant. Excuse me. Describe how nearby and sensitive populations will be protected from contaminants during the cleanup work on the site. You should know what your project is. You can be really specific here. Think about the benefits, both direct and indirect, from this cleanup action and the reuse of the site. Some environmental benefits could include discussing the specific contaminants that you're cleaning up. Are they media specific? Are you going to be cleaning up the air, surface and groundwater, or soil? How are you going to reduce exposure to these contaminants? And how are you going to restore the site? Some social benefits that can come from this work. You can look at blight reduction. You can look at improvements to the quality of life of citizens in your community. You can look at building some affordable housing. You can look at the creation of jobs. Some common health benefits associated with this type of work. Take a look at things such as asthma reduction due to improved air quality. Take a look at lower blood levels of lead. You might be protecting a drinking water supply or restoring one. You're also eliminating exposures to contaminants by sensitive populations. Some additional benefits you can discuss here. You need to have a plan to protect the general community and sensitive populations from project contaminants during your cleanup. Here are some very common ideas. You can put up signs during different project phases. If appropriate, fence the site during all project phases. Look into dust control. Utilize house-to-house notices to let people know what's going on. Most people will get freaked out if they see guys in moon suits walking around a site and they don't know what's going on. Please remember, if you have a sensitive population that was discussed in your community needs section, you need to make the link here. Moving on to slide 92. Economic benefits and or green space. Please notice the new language here, the and or language. This is deliberate language giving economic and green space benefits equal billing this year. Based on your project under this grant, respond to either one or the other, or if appropriate, you can respond to both. Economic benefits. Explain how the grant will produce economic benefits, such as increased employment and an expanded tax base, through the redevelopment of the site cleaned up under this grant. Provide quantitative estimates where you can. Some examples, jobs, taxes, are property taxes, collections going up, sales tax, income taxes. Take a look at property values. Take a look at how this project will stimulate area-wide economic development. Here we go with the or part, non-economic benefits. describe all the non-economic benefits associated with the site to be reused for green space or some other not-for-profit activity. Non-profit and charitable reuse. Could be a community center. Could be a Habitat for Humanity housing project. Could be governmental. You could be building a new city hall or fire station or police station. Green space reuse. You could be looking at wetlands, green space, and open space. Recreational and pocket parks, baseball fields, soccer fields. You could be looking at preserving open space on the urban edge, creating a town forest, for instance. Moving on to the next criteria on slide 94. 4C, environmental benefits from infrastructure reuse and sustainable reuse. Describe any anticipated environmental benefits beyond the remediation contaminants associated with the sustainable redevelopment of the site cleaned up under this grant. This needs to include the use of existing infrastructure, such as utilities, public transit, and public transit. Explain how this grant will support EPA initiatives such as construction and demolition recycling, low-impact development, green remediation, green building. Remember that infrastructure reuse comes from the Brownfields Law. This is just not idle language that we made up. Discuss all possible infrastructure reuse and how this will play into the redevelopment of your site. Down here are some common examples of existing infrastructure. Water lines, sewer lines, electricity, roads, sidewalks, storm drains, buildings, public transit. Moving on to slide 96. Information here on sustainable reuse possibilities. You need to describe all sustainable reuse possibilities that will work on incorporating that you're going to work on incorporating into the redevelopment of this site. Talk about things like green buildings, LEED certification, Energy Star certification, etc. Talk about smart growth principles, how you're going to make your community more livable. Talk about energy and resource efficiency. That shouldn't be too hard nowadays. Talk about historical building preservation and a renovation of these historic structures. Take a look at innovative stormwater controls. Some examples of that are pervious pavement, gray water reuse, on-site retention or treatment of stormwater. Look at how this project might impact ecological revitalization. On slide 97, some more on sustainable reuse. Take a look at sustainable low-impact landscaping using native materials, native plants. Take a look at how you're going to maintain and promote community character and livability. Are you going to use local materials and resources to get this work done? Take a look at green cleanups. Is the machinery out there going to use biodiesel or any other kind of alternative fuel? Look at construction and demolition recycling. Look at separating out hazardous debris from non-hazardous debris. Take a look at conservation of resources. Describe your existing or future sustainability measures in your community which may apply to this project. Common topics are things such as multi-use zoning, transit-oriented development, development of a master plan or a community vision. Take a look at ordinance developed that might require all future building in your community to meet certain LEED certifications or Energy Star certifications. On slide 99, we look at 4D, your plan for tracking and measuring progress. Here you need to describe your plan for tracking, measuring the progress towards achieving your expected project outcomes. Here we come with another definition. Outcomes refer to the result, effect, or consequence that will occur from carrying out the activities under this grant. Outcomes can be environmental, behavioral, health-related, or programmatic. They must be quantitative and may not necessarily be achievable during the project period. Expected outcomes of Brownfields grant can include the number of jobs leveraged and other funding leveraged through the economic reuse of your site or these sites. The number of acres made ready for reuse. or the acres of green space you've created in your community. You can also look at whether the project will minimize exposure to hazardous substances in your community. All outcomes of a successful brownfields redevelopment project. On slide 100, make sure to identify your outcomes and your schedule for achieving them. Now here we get to the end of our presentation. We've got a ton of resources out there that you folks can access to write a better grant application. State contacts in Region 1, you go to our Regional Brownfields website. We have all our state brownfields contacts there. Region 2 has some information here concerning New Jersey. I guess on the other ones, you can see the Region 2 staff state contacts. In Region 3, for all states, looks like you need to go to the Region 3 Brownfields state contact webpage. Click on that, and you'll find all kinds of information you need. Moving on to slide 103, we have a ton of web-based resources out there. A ton of them. Take a look at here. Take a look at all these. Everything you needed to know about applying and filling out a Brownfields grant application, or were either too afraid or too bored to ask. Now we get to the end of the presentation. Does anybody have any questions on the ranking criteria or the threshold criteria that came before?
We do have a couple online questions. The first one is a budget question, and it is, when it's from Region 2, when estimating costs, do you use 2008 or add for inflation $2,009 dollars?
Again, you can do it the best estimate as possible, but again, if this proposal being selected, those numbers will be revisited in the negotiation with the work plan. So be the best accurate that you can.
Okay, this is also from Region 2. It's regarding the 2CI. Can I choose which 5 grants to describe? Most recent, earliest, my 5 favorites?
Again.
That would be the most recent.
The most recent, yes.
Okay, and we have a question from Region 3. Are the support letters for the community-based organizations included in the narrative proposal and the page limit, or are they additional pages?
They are considered attachments to your proposal, and they do not count in the 18-page limit.
Okay, another one just came in from Region 1. Does the community relations plan need to be submitted to EPA prior to grant submittal?
From an old friend, John Weaver. Glad to hear from you again, John. No, the community relations plan is something that is done after you received your cleanup grant.
Yep.
Okay, that's post-award community relations. What you need to do prior is make sure you have a community engagement plan that discusses how you're going to let these people know about the grant prior to. That's part of your threshold criteria. Anything else?
Any questions from the phone?
Hello, yes, I have a question. Is this session being recorded, and if so, how can we listen to it?
Yes, it's going to be recorded. It is recorded, and it's going to be archived on the CLUIN website where you register. You should be able to access an archived copy of this presentation, the audio portion, as well as see the slides. The slides will remain, the PowerPoint slides will remain on the website, I think for up to a year.
Yes, that's correct, a year.
Have any specific RLF-related questions? We didn't go over the guidelines, but are there any questions about the presentation that was attached.
I have a question, just a general question, regarding review, ranking, and how the overall available funding is awarded. I understand it's based upon your response to the criteria. However, I know that it's also based your statutory, how much is required to go to petroleum brownfields as opposed to hazardous waste brownfields. But there's also supposed to be distribution between urban and non-urban and new applicants and returning applicants. Then why does it seem to me that there's always so many awarded from certain regions and other regions get very few awards?
Deb, I know who you are.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Deb. No, that's a very valid question, and it's kind of this mystery soup of how they choose awards, but we do try primarily to go based first off of score. Everybody gets a score, and we start at the top, who scored 100 points, and we move down the list until we run out of money. When we start to run out of money toward the end of the list, that's when we have a little more flexibility as to are we meeting some of these goals. So if, for example, there are several people, maybe we've run out of money at score 82, and there's 50 projects who scored 82, and we only have enough money to fund three of them, we'll then take a look at those 50 proposals and see who may meet some of these criteria that we are required to balance for as geographic distribution and urban versus rural and petroleum and the other factors we look at. But it really doesn't happen until you get toward the end of the pot of money and where
okay.
people put on the list.
Am I allowed to ask another question?
Sure.
The waiver of matching funds, has that ever been done? I know you said it was very, very difficult.
Yeah, it's very rare. We've never had it done in our region, but it is rare. And I think there have been several places that have been allowed after sort of the post-Katrina areas down in the south.
People that were affected by major natural disasters.
Yeah, but maybe in Region 1 or 2 have other examples. I don't have any to share. We've never had one.
No, Region 2, we don't have any either.
We've never had one here in Region 1 either.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
It's very rare. So headquarters is the one that's actually making that determination. It's not regional. But it's
thanks.
Very rare. Mm-hmm.
Any more questions on the phone?
Somebody asked a question about that waiver. So basically, of these three regions, they've never had decisions made in Washington, and they said basically the only waivers have been granted after Hurricane Katrina and so forth. That's how they forget. Had a major national disaster.
We all set?
Great. Thank you, everyone.
I think so.
Good luck, everybody.
Thanks.